I'm your host, Patty Teal, and I'd like to welcome you to the very first Everyday Enlightenment Show brought to you by Sedona Mago Retreat, a center for spiritual awakening. Our goal is to share the wisdom and heartfelt messages of spiritual leaders, teachers, and everyday people who are making a difference in our world. And my guest today is Randy Davila, president of Hampton Roads Publishing and Hierophant Publishing. He's also the author of Gnostic Mysteries and Think Like a Publisher. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here. And yeah, I'm just wonderful to talk with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you too. So the books that you wrote, they sound so very different. Did the Gnostic Mystery come first?
It did, yes. So, you know, people often get confused. They say, wow, you wrote a book about the Gnostics and you wrote a book for authors. I need you to explain that to me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I wear two hats because I wear one hat as an author and another hat as a publisher. So as you mentioned, I'm the president of Hampton Roads Publishing Company and Hierophant Publishing. You know, our focus is books that help you evolve your body, mind, and spirit. And in that respect, my own book, The Gnostic Mystery, which is a novel, however, I use the vehicle of fiction to tell the truth about the Gnostics and the formation of the Christian religion. The Gnostics, for some of your listeners who may not know, mm-hmm. were a very mystical group of Christians, early Christians, mm-hmm. from around the time of Jesus up for the first 300 years of Christianity. And unfortunately, they were, quite honestly, burned at the stake by the group that would become the Catholic Church. And so the Gnostics have always been with us. We just don't call them Gnostics anymore. But these were the mystical group of early Christians who saw God in each and every human being. They eschewed the idea that God was up there and that we were down here. The Gnostics would say, I know, and know what? Well, I know God. Mm-hmm. But again, not in some intellectual capacity, but more in a feeling or a heart or experiential. And so that's what made them mystical. Because how could a God, an infinite and all-powerful being, be expressed in words which are finite in its entirety? And they lived that way. And so how are they different from the group that became the Catholics? So they saw no difference between male and female. There were female Gnostic priests. Of course, Mary Magdalene and were one of the most famous ones who the Gnostics would claim as their own. You know, they didn't see race. They didn't see social class. These were not barriers. And the other radical thing about the Gnostics, which probably in most led to their demise, they advocated that you did not need to seek God through someone else, namely a priest or a bishop.
I see.
That God was inside of you. Mm-hmm. So you looked within. You followed your own path. That, of course, was quite a threatening message to the priestly class, mm-hmm. which was developing into a political organization in the beginning of the 4th century, became married with the Roman Empire under Emperor Constantine at the Council of Nicaea. That was the beginning of the end of the Gnostics.
So very interesting. So in so many ways, though, we've come back around to their way of thinking, haven't we?
You know, we're here at the Sedona Mago Retreat Center, and many of the ideas that we publish in our book and that are often called New Age.
Right.
In our business, as you know, is that there's nothing new about these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these ideas that are supposedly New Age mm-hmm. have been with us for thousands of years.
Did it take a lot of study to write that book?
Well, it did. It was a very research-heavy book. I used the vehicle of fiction because there are some wonderful nonfiction books that convey this information.
Mm-hmm.
But I used the vehicle of fiction to tell the truth. And your story starts with a man, Jack, who's a very successful Westerner from the United States who has a very successful business and has done everything right. I mean, he went to the right college. He did everything that was said, and he became very wealthy. And yet he is having a midlife spiritual crisis.
Mm-hmm.
All the stuff that he did is not fulfilling his soul.
Mm-hmm.
He heads off to Jerusalem in effort to rekindle the Christian faith of his childhood. and meets with an old college roommate who introduces him to a professor of religion. And long story short, he comes into possession of some ancient scrolls mm-hmm. that were written by the Gnostic Christians, and goes on a quest to get to the truth of whether these scrolls, what they teach, are real or not for him. And this search shakes the very foundation of his Christian faith. It's a spiritual journey set in the backdrop of the Middle East, but still a very, very hotbed for belief. So it's a book of the power of belief. It's a book about not only educating you on the Gnostics, but asking you to look within yourself and investigate your own beliefs.
Were you raised in a particular religion?
I was. I was raised Catholic, much like the protagonist of my book. I often say I had a wonderful Catholic experience. I know that many of my friends did not, but I had a fine Catholic experience, and I studied philosophy and religion in college. And once I began down the mystical path, I found that the majority of the teachings as they were presented to me just weren't enough. And I was so relieved and refreshed to find that the truth that I was seeking in Christianity had been there all along and had been covered up by what I feel is, quite frankly, misinterpretation. And I'll point to two elements of that. The Gnostics would say that the worst thing that you could do on a spiritual path is to teach someone via fear or guilt. Any time that you feel afraid, any time that you feel shamed mm-hmm. in the context of a spiritual community, mm-hmm. I would invite you to question whether that teaching is true.
I really tend to agree with that, or strongly agree with that. Actually, I was not raised with a particular religion. My father was raised Jewish, and my mother was somewhat raised Christian, but we pretty much lived by the golden rule, I would say, and respect everybody's religion. But for a while, I taught Sunday school, really enjoyed it. But I remember looking at some of the stories and going, oh, this is too scary. I can't read this to these little 3- and 4-year-olds. And I remember somebody at the church saying, they need to know. And I just don't think that's the right approach to scare children, yes, or anyone.
I couldn't agree more. And so, in fact, my book, one of the central theses is the fact that many of the stories that are contained in the four main Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are in fact stories, that they are fiction, that the Gnostics wrote them as fiction. And the proof of that is that these stories, for instance, the virgin birth, the changing of water to wine, even the crucifixion and resurrection, these were stories that were presented and had been around for hundreds of years in the what's called the Greek and Roman mystery religions. In other words, Dionysus was the Greek god of wine. One of the reasons he had this name is because he often changed water into wine, specifically at marriage ceremonies. Mm-hmm. Does this sound familiar?
A little bit.
In the Greek and Roman world, if you weren't born of a virgin, it would be impossible to claim a divine heritage, because every god was the son of Zeus or Apollo and some mortal virgin. Mm-hmm. That was often impregnated by a lightning bolt. So there's incredible parallels between many of the stories in the New Testament mm-hmm. and older religions, the Greek and Roman mystery religions, and these stories were parables. Much like Jesus taught in parables, many of the stories ascribed to him, in fact, are teaching parables, mm-hmm. not meant to be taken literally. The most powerful one, of course, is the crucifixion and the resurrection. So almost every one of these mystery religions had a God that was sacrificed for the sins of humanity mm-hmm. and that ultimately rose again. So when you start to begin to look at these things as an academic sense, you see that the story of Christianity is not a unique one. And then you can understand why the story was there, namely because you see an evolution in God. In other words, prior to Jesus in the mystery religions, God was a punishing father figure. Look at the Old Testament. I'm an angry, vengeful God. You will put no God before me. But what Jesus and the mystery religions did was they transformed our ideas of God because they said, no, God is going to transform from this tyrant into your best friend, into a personal experience. And the vehicle for that will be the forgiveness of sin. And he sent his only son for that. So it's a profoundly powerful metaphor and transformative experience that unfortunately has been used to instill fear and guilt, i.e. you better do this, you better believe that, or X, Y, and Z will happen to you. Mm-hmm. And that misses the point. That misses the true nature of that incredibly powerful crucifixion and resurrection story.
My goodness, I'm just astounded by your knowledge and how much you know. I imagine you have always been an avid reader.
Well, yes, and so as you mentioned too, you know, I ended up in publishing. It's a perfect home for me. I you know, we love books that, you know, help people enhance their body, mind, and spirit, and also challenge you know, their consciousness. And to that regard, I wrote a book, you know, Think Like a Publisher, mm-hmm. 33 Essential Tips to Write, Promote, and Sell Your Book. Because as a publisher, you know, that I get asked that all the time. Gee, Randy, what do I need to do to get my book published?
Right. And, you know, nowadays with the self-publishing growing so much, anyone can write a book, of course, and have it for sale on Amazon. But it's not so easy to sell it, is it?
Well, you know, and it's not. It's not so easy to sell it, but really it starts way back at the beginning at the writing process. And that's one of the things I address in my book. You know, it's interesting to me how because we know how to write, meaning we can pick up a pen or we can, you know, we know the English language, we can organize words in a sentence, we think that that somehow qualifies us to write without getting any more education in the subject. Mm-hmm. And so what I encourage people who are thinking of writing books is, you know, is to get an education. You absolutely can do it. I writing is a creative endeavor that I love. But don't make the mistake of thinking that all you need to do is sit down and write a book and put it up on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot more there's so many common pitfalls and mistakes that first-time authors make.
What are some of those?
Oh, gosh. Well, the biggest one is lack of focus. So, you know, when you sit down to write a book, typically the first-time author tries to put everything they know in one book. And so you end up with a book that crosses multiple topics. Maybe it sounds like a memoir as well as a teaching book. You know, think about it. There's only two types of books, ultimately. There's nonfiction and there's fiction. Mm-hmm. The purpose of every nonfiction book is to educate the reader. I don't care what the category is. Mm-hmm. A nonfiction book is a teaching book. Whether it's a history, auto mechanics, or self-help, or spirituality like we publish, the purpose of a nonfiction book is to teach the reader something.
Well, that simplifies things a bit.
The purpose of a fiction book is to entertain. The primary purpose. The primary purpose is to entertain. People read novels to go on a journey, mm-hmm. to take a path, to listen to a story. Now, we also know that great fiction books may also educate the reader in addition to entertain them.
Sure, like your book and a lot of history.
Right, mm-hmm. And we also know that great nonfiction books may be entertaining,
sure,
in addition to educational. However, the primary purpose for each is what I said. And you asked me what the common pitfall is. The biggest mistake that we see from first-time authors, mm-hmm. is that they forget their primary purpose of their genre. So what does that mean? So in a nonfiction book, the author goes off on tangents. They tell too much of their personal story. They forget that their whole purpose is to teach something, mm-hmm. and they get off topic. In a fiction book, well, what we often see is people forget that they're there to entertain primarily, and they start to you start to see that the author has a lot of ideas about the world and how they think people should behave. And they become very heavy-handed mm-hmm. with their with these ideas, often putting things in their characters, words in their characters' mouth that don't belong there, mm-hmm. taking them, the plots, you know, loses focus as the author tries to beat you over the head with their ideas. So, you know, this can be summed up as fiction has to be subtle, mm-hmm. nonfiction, not subtle. Mm-hmm. You never want a nonfiction book to end up in one of those classes that fine literature is, where people are saying, gee, what did the author mean by that? No, right. Nonfiction, it should be very clear. Mm-hmm. Fiction, it's the exact opposite. You want to, as the great Stephen King says, you know, description starts in the author's mind, but ends in the mind of the reader.
Oh, would you say that one more time?
In fiction, description starts in the mind of the author, mm-hmm. but ends in the mind of the reader.
That's lovely.
And that's from the great Stephen King.
Would you say that almost everyone needs an editor, whether they're self-publishing or whether they are?
Absolutely. Yes. And I'm not talking, and I have a background in newspapers. That's how I got into writing. But I would, not a newspaper editor, not your English teacher. I mean a real book editor, mm-hmm. someone who understands. So, you know, how to angle, how to focus, how to position a book. You see, because a book is the combination of four things. It's art, it's inspiration, but it's craft and marketing. Now, most people, when they sit down to write, it's because they have the first two. They have the art and the inspiration. That's what that place is coming from. But they need to learn the craft and the marketing so that their book can be, they can take that art and inspiration and sculpt it into something that can be read and understood by as many people as possible. And that's where a seasoned book editor would come in.
I agree. So do the companies that you work with, do they take submissions?
Yes. Yeah, so you can go to hierophantpublishing.com or, you know, actually, I'll make it easy on everyone. You can go to randydavila.com. That's RANDYDAVILA.com. That's got links to my companies, both the publishing companies and my event company. If you follow those, you know, links, it'll explain to you how to submit. You know, we are always on the lookout for new and emerging voices in publishing.
That's nice to know. Yeah. So how does an author get a platform so that people know them?
Yeah, so platform is the other thing. You know, so in my book, Think Like a Publisher, I cover all these things. I cover how to focus, how to angle, you know, things to think about. I want to help authors avoid the common mistakes. And then the other big piece of it in today's world is platform. And so what do we mean by platform? So platform is who, you know, when you want to write a book, you know, well, who's going to care? And I mean that by saying, have you also, if you're writing a nonfiction book, have you also been talking about your ideas? You know, have you been, you know, whatever you want to teach about in that book, I hope that you are teaching about that in the world. And if you're not, then that's okay, but it's time to start doing that. Mm-hmm. Because, and you can do that in a variety of ways. You can do that in lectures and workshops and interviews and you know, all radio and, you know, all sorts of ways. Depending on your particular subject, you go to the people who are interested in that subject and begin to position yourself as an expert. The reason for that is these are the people that are going to buy your book when it first comes out. And your goal and my goal, an author and publisher in the modern world, is a partnership. And our goal is to get your book in the hands of as many people as possible initially, most of which will come from your own platform and home team, as well as our own platform and home team. And if those people like it, enough of them will refer it to their friends. Because even in the modern world, ladies and gentlemen, the number one way a book sells is word of mouth. So if your book begins to be referred by friends to other people, there's what we say in the book business is that your book now has legs. It can walk on its own.
Right. Right. I think some people make the mistake of thinking that if they have a publisher, they don't need to market themselves. And so you've just kind of explained that's not the case.
That's not the case at all. And I can, in 2 minutes, tell you exactly why and make this clear to anyone. Mm-hmm. Because it used to be that way. It used to be if you had a publisher, then you were golden. Well, let's think about it. 20 years ago, if you wanted to buy a book in this country, what were your options? How'd you do that? Well, you went to a bookstore. You looked. You went to the section of that bookstore that had the category that you wanted. You looked on the shelf, and you picked a book from a limited shelf space in the limited store in your geographic area. Mm-hmm. That was the only way you could buy a book. Sure, you could go, you know, check out a book at the library, but it was the same process there as well. So if you were one of the lucky few authors that got published and had your book wind up on a bookstore shelf, that guaranteed you a certain modicum of success.
Right. Not that way anymore.
But today, that's not how we buy books. Mm-hmm. That's not how we even learn about books or shop for books. You don't go to the bookstore to pick them in most cases. And as a result of that, the world has changed. And you as the author, the whole business has changed. Publishers now look for authors who understand that there's a platform marketing component to this.
Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit more personal nowadays too, isn't it? Because social media people share a bit more than
you sound like you read my book. So, social media has changed the book business and changed many businesses. But think about it. If you wanted to reach out to your author, an author that you loved previously, you wrote a letter to the publisher and kept your fingers crossed. And chances are you'd never heard. Now you just go to their Facebook page. Follow mm-hmm. them. You can message them. I mean, mm-hmm. you can connect with people in right. a way. That's social media or, you know, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube has put us in touch with people in our affinity groups and people that who write about the things that we love in ways that just weren't possible in the past.
Oh, that is a great explanation. Now, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Insight Events and how that ties in with the authors that
yeah,
you represent?
So I'm also the president of Insight Events USA. And we've done events all over the country that are designed to enhance your body, mind, spirit. Because a few years ago, we realized, as many other publishers have, that in this changing world, that we have to do more than just book, you know, be a book publisher. People want to experience their author. They want to go to a lecture with that author. They want to go to a workshop with that author. We're moving into an age now, or in fact, we're already here, when philosophy and knowledge is not enough, that we have to put these tools into practice. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just enough to read it and think about it. If you don't do it, what does it mean? What does it matter? How does mm-hmm. it? So through our events, and we do online workshops as well, and telephone, and been a lot of face to face from everywhere, from Seattle to Miami to Boston to here in beautiful Sedona, as we'll have what the gathering of the shamans.
Oh, we're all so excited about
here
that.
Next mm-hmm. month. And I would love to tell your listeners to come and join us, but of course we've been sold out for a few months.
Maybe you'll come back.
But we will certainly be back next year, and we'll have the famous Don Miguel Ruiz, author of The Four Agreements, and Don Miguel Ruiz Jr. and Heather Ashimara and Dr. Stephen Farmer. And so some of the most powerful and well-known shamanic teachers in the country will be descending upon you here in Sedona next month.
Cannot wait. So that's a great way to help your authors to get out there and help people to really, as you say, experience the teaching rather than just read it.
It all works together. You know, mm-hmm. the books, the events, the online stuff, it's really one, it functions as one unit.
Mm-hmm. Do you only represent the authors who you're the publisher for?
No, we don't. In fact, Don Miguel Ruiz Sr., the author of The Four Agreements, that was published by our friends at Amber Allen. And so we did not publish that book, but we love working with him. We worked with Dr. Joe Dispenza. We've worked with Byron Katie. We've worked with many authors who were not published by us, but we only work with those who we feel help evolve your body, mind, and spirit. You know, if we're in that, we're in the self-help and spirituality field, we're all on our own journey of consciousness. We're all on our own evolution. And this is our humble contribution to help those who want to join us further along the path in that way.
Boy, you must have a very fun job.
I do. Yeah. I love my job.
And are you always on the lookout for new ideas and new writers?
Absolutely. You know, we are always, really the way I describe it is, you know, are you saying something old in a new way? Because as we mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, you know, many of these ideas have been present for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what we often find is that someone has a new way of saying it,
mm-hmm.
that reaches a new person, that reaches a new group. And I just love seeing people wake up to the majesty of who they are, to becoming their perfect self, to realizing that they don't have to live in guilt and shame and fear, and to really step into their divinity. And that's, I mean, I got the greatest job in the world, and to watch people do that and to be a part of that in some small way has been a gift to me from the universe.
Well, you have been a gift to me today. You are so very articulate. I have absolutely loved hearing you talk. And do you also go out and give talks at this point in your life?
I do. I give occasional lecture on Gnosticism and Christianity, and I teach my publishing workshops, which they're I love teaching, and they're in pretty high demand. And so, again, if you're anyone out there is writing a book or would like to learn more, please visit randydavila.com.
Would you spell that?
Sure. It's RANDYDAVILA.com.
Well, I think you shared it already with us, Randy, your message to share with the world. I think you pretty much summed it up. You want to try one more time?
You know who you are. Look within and find that beautiful spark of divinity that resides in you and nurture that. Because that's what the world needs. You, 100%, be that.
Wow. I've been doing this for years, and you are one of my favorite guests. I absolutely loved it. Thank you so much for
joining
us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure.
Take care. Be sure to check back often to hear our latest shows. Bye now.